I wanted to share something with you this morning. Many don't know this. Carrie is very well aware, but I have a hearing deficiency, and sadly, it's contagious. It seems to get worse around this time of the year. It's called selective hearing, and it especially is worse when football is on. And I don't know how many of you suffer from this. Does anybody else suffer from wives? Do any of your husbands suffer from selective hearing during football season? And it's not, Carrie and I have had whole conversations that I was completely unaware of later. And it's not that I'm trying to tune her out, it's just I get so focused on what I'm doing that it's hard for me to pay attention or recognize that other things are going on. And so now she's gotten to where if she wants me to remember something, she has to say, okay, look at me. Look at me. All right. And she'll tell me something, she'll go, okay, now repeat it. Did you hear me? Are you listening? And it's the same tact that we have to use with Harper a lot of times. Do any of you parents have trouble getting your kids to listen to you? You know, we're constantly saying, are you listening? Did you hear me? Are you paying attention to what I just said? I had a friend in Richmond years ago who would call me, and he would just want to call, nothing in particular to talk about. He just wanted to talk. And so he would call me, but he would spend most of the conversation talking and laughing with his wife who was in the room with him. And it was so frustrating because I'd be trying to tell him a story, be trying to say something, and he'd be laughing at what was on TV or about something his wife said. And I'd get to the point where I would just leave I'd just set the phone down, I'd walk away. Or sometimes I'd hang up. And one time, no kidding, one time, 30 minutes after I hung up on him, he calls me back and goes, where did you go? Did we get cut off? I said, no, I hung up on you. And he was like, why? Why did you do that? It's because you weren't listening to me. It's a very frustrating feeling when we talk and we don't think someone is listening. You know, if you go to the Psalms, you'll find that the Psalms are full of people who have that very same frustration, who ask questions like, God, are you listening? Are you there? Are you paying attention to me, God? They're crying out of their despair, of loneliness, of hurt, of pain, and wonder where God is and if He is listening. These are known as the Lament Psalms. I think the laments are very important for us. They're important because they teach us how to ask hard questions. They show us that there is nothing that that cannot be brought before God. And just as importantly, I think they teach us that there are some questions that we need to be asking ourselves. The same kind of questions we put to God. Questions like, are you listening? Are we listening? This morning I want to look at two different psalms, Psalm 50 and Psalm 81. Both of these are lament psalms, but they're unusual. You see, these lament psalms are not from God's people, but they are from God Himself. Very unusual. These are laments of God, and when you read these two psalms in their entirety, they show us a picture of a God who is in anguish over the fact that His people aren't listening, that they're not paying attention to Him, that they're acting in ways that go against the very laws that they said they would obey and believe in. They show us a God who is crying out to His people, please come back to me. Please pay attention. Let's start in Psalm 50. In both of these psalms, the first few verses serve as a summons to hear God speak and then brief reminders about who God is before His complaints are made. Starting in Psalm 50, verses 1 through 4, the Mighty One, God the Lord, He speaks and He summons the earth from the rising of the sun to its setting. Out of Zion, the perfection of beauty, God shines forth. Our God comes. He does not keep silence. Before Him is a devouring fire and around Him a mighty tempest. He calls to the heavens above and to the earth that He may judge His people. In this summons, the psalmist is setting up God in a very mythic and awe-inspiring way and showing who God is. God is a mighty God. He is an all-powerful God, the one who has the right to judge, the one who has the right to lay down all authority. I decided that the next time Harper does something and gets into trouble, I want to call someone and have him come over to my house. And I want him to walk into Harper's room and go, Harper, Daddy, the creator of you, master of this house, summons you to the living room. He speaks out of the big chair in the living room, and He will not keep silent, and you will feel His wrath. You know what I mean? Maybe not. That would probably terrify her to death. But you can see what kind of effect this might have on the people. showing who God is and who He is going to be and what is about to happen. Setting the mood, showing that God is the one who has the right to judge. And then listen to the reminder in verses 5 and 6. God says, "Gather to me my faithful ones who made a covenant with me by sacrifice. The heavens declare His righteousness, for God Himself is judge." If you have your Bibles, I want you to underline or maybe write down a few of the key words here. Faithful ones, covenant, righteousness, sacrifice. These are words that are known as covenant language. They are reminding Israel of something very important, that you are God's people, that you have made a pact with God, that you have promised in some very specific ways to obey God and to believe in Him and act according to His commands. This is who you said you'd be. We made this covenant together. Okay, hold your finger there. Now flip over to Psalm 81. I want to take a look just really quickly at the summons and the reminder in Psalm 81. Sing aloud to God our strength. Shout for joy to the God of Jacob. Raise a song and sound the tambourine, the sweet lyre and the harp. Blow the trumpet at the new moon, at the full moon on our feast day. See, again, there is a summons that God is about to speak, a call to attend God, but the mood is very, very different. Here, instead of this mythic awesomeness of God, we have God speaking, being heralded by festive music, joyful celebration, showing that not only is God to be feared, not only is God the Almighty and God the Judge, but God is also someone who brings joy into our life and gives us cause to celebrate. And now listen to the reminder, which is a little bit longer. He says, "For it is a statute of Israel, a rule of the God of Jacob. He made it a decree in Joseph when he went out over the land. I hear a language I had not known. I relieved your shoulder of the burden. Your hands were freed from the basket. In distress I called and I delivered you. I answered you in the secret place of thunder and tested you at the waters of Meribah." It's amazing that just in a few short verses, God reminds His people of a rich history of God taking care of them. He sets them in the mind of the Exodus, this thing about the decree over against Egypt, in Joseph. He's reminding them of what He has done for them. "I relieved you of the burden. In your distress you cried out. I heard you and I did something about it." In just a few short words, God reminds them of how He has acted for them in the past. Imagine for a second what that might have done to them. Imagine for a second these people being reminded of all the rich ways that God has blessed them. What would that do to their listening? What would it do for you if every day before you worship God, if every day before you go into Bible study, if every day before you pray to God, you take a second and reflect. You reflect on all the ways that God has blessed your life. I know that there are times when I think about it. I don't always do this. I'm not always perfect about this. But a lot of times on Sunday mornings, I try to do that. I try to think about the ways that God has blessed Carrie and I. I think about Harper. And I think about the new baby that's on the way. I think about, even though I've been sick for a while, I'm starting to get better. And I thank God for my progress. And I thank God for feeling better a little each day. How does that change the way we listen to God when we remember? And I think that's the reason these are important. The reason that they're included. The reason the summons and the reminders are there. And the reason we've talked about them this morning is because they remind people of who God is and what He's done. They give us a reason to listen to what He's about to say. He says, "This is who I am. I am a mighty God with all power and authority whose presence ought to bring you joy. This is what I've done for you, and you rejoice because of the actions I've taken on your behalf. And this is who you said you'd be. You said you'd be my people. You said you would obey my commands and you would listen to my guidance and you would rely on me." And despite all of that, despite all of the things that you know to be true, still you miss the point. Still, you give me cause to lament. You know, when Harper gets in trouble, it's not enough to just punish her. She feels really bad when we punish her. When we get on to her, you know, she hunches her shoulders and her little lip sticks out, and it's so sad, and she starts to cry, and we ask her, "Harper, you know, it's okay, we still love you. Do you know why we got onto you? Uh-huh. Why did we get onto you? I don't know, you know, and she doesn't understand. And so we have to take time and we have to explain it to her. We have to let her know what it is that she did wrong so that she will be able to correct it in the future. And generally, no, it always comes down to the same thing. Behavior that is inconsistent with known expectations. That's generally what it's all about. She knows what she's supposed to do. She doesn't do it, and therefore she gets in trouble. God's lament is essentially the same thing. We know what we're supposed to do, but we don't do it. I want you to take a second and think about any lost or broken relationship you've ever had. Think about the betrayal, the destruction of trust that you experienced. And you'll know how God feels when we disobey Him. Any parent who's ever had to deal with children who don't listen or disobey or give them a hard time, we know how God must feel. We love them so much, and we want what's best for them. And when they don't listen and when they go against what we know is best for them, it hurts. It doesn't just make us angry, but it hurts. And so this is God's lament. And like all laments have one thing in common, so does this one. The complaint. The cause for the anguish. And so this morning I want us to spend a little bit of time looking at what it is that God is saying. What is it that He's complaining about? Let's go back to Psalm 50, starting in verse 8. God says, "It's not for your sacrifices that I rebuke you. Your burnt offerings are continually before me. But I will not accept a bull from your house or goats from your folds. For every beast of the forest is mine, the cattle on a thousand hills. I know all the birds of the air and all that moves in the field is mine. If I were hungry, I would not tell you. For the world and its fullness is mine. Do I eat the flesh of bulls or drink the blood of goats?" Offer a sacrifice to God, a sacrifice of thanksgiving. Perform your vows to the Most High and call upon me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver you, and you shall glorify me. It's obvious that Israel wasn't forsaking God. They hadn't forgotten about God. They were still worshiping Him on a regular basis. He says so Himself. He says, "It's not for your sacrifices that I rebuke you. They are continually before me." But then He goes on and He says, "But I'm not going to accept it. I don't need it. All of the birds in the air are mine. All the beasts in the fields are mine. If I'm hungry, I'm not going to come to you. It's not your sacrifices that bother me." So what's going on? What is it that God is so upset about? True, they're worshiping God, but I believe they were doing it for the wrong reasons. They're worshiping God continually. They're going about their business. They're doing what they're supposed to be doing, but yet they were doing it for the wrong reasons. I think that somehow they had become convinced that God was somehow dependent upon them and the sacrifices that they were making. That somehow they needed, God needed them to do this. But the thing is, God doesn't need their sacrifices no more than He needs ours. See, God doesn't need us to praise Him. He doesn't need us to gather here every single Sunday morning. He doesn't need us to take communion. He doesn't need us to go on mission trips. He doesn't need us to give. He doesn't need any of it. Certainly He deserves it. Certainly He wants it. But He doesn't need it. We do. We need it. We need to be here. We need each other. We need to be able to show our reliance on God. And above all, we need a way to be able to show God how much we love Him. And as a point of clarification, when I say need, I don't mean need as a sense of duty or responsibility or tradition. When I talk about need, I mean we need it like we desire it. We need to be able to do these things. Why are we here this morning? Are we here because we need it like we need air to breathe? Or because we're supposed to be? Because it's what we do. It's tradition. Are we automatons who come and we fill pews and we go about our daily business and we just go through the motions? Or are we here because we are people who are desperately and hopelessly in love with God? Why is it we are here? You know, God's main complaint is that while he has their automatic obedience, he doesn't have their heart. And that's the thing he desires most of all. God says that in the first complaint, I want your heart. Your sacrifices are always before me, but your heart's not in it. You're doing what you're supposed to do, but your heart isn't there. His second complaint goes very much along with this one. He says, I want your life. To the wicked, God says, now I want you to remember, he's still talking to his people. He hasn't shifted the conversation. But now he's addressing them as, to the wicked, God says, what right have you to recite my statutes or take my covenant on your lips? You hate discipline. You cast my words behind you. If you see a thief, you're pleased with him, and you keep company with the adulterers. Your mouth gives free rein to evil, and your tongue frames deceit. You speak against your brother, and you slander your mother's son. In 81:9, he said, there shall be no strange god among you. You shall not bow down to a foreign god. God says, I want your life. It's so close to what he said earlier. We're starting to get a picture of people who only give their seconds to God. They only pay attention when it suits them, when they're supposed to. And the rest of the time, they do whatever else they want. How many of you ever have leftover nights? Do you have leftover nights? Growing up, we had leftover nights. It's at the end of the week when everything strange came out of the refrigerator. All the little weird containers, little Cool Whip containers that are repurposed for something else. You don't know what's in it because you don't remember what you cooked on Monday. But it comes out and you have these weird meals like spaghetti with mashed potatoes, corn, and a soggy Mexican salad, you know? And it's gross and you don't like it because none of it goes together. It wasn't meant to go together. There's no thought that went into it. There's no purpose for how these all things are supposed to come together. It's just sort of, yeah, whatever, and it doesn't taste good. And everybody, how many of you, anybody familiar with these nights? Yeah, we're all familiar with these nights, and you hate those nights. You hate those nights because it doesn't taste good. You know, God doesn't want leftovers either. He doesn't want whatever energy, whatever passion, whatever time we have, after everything else in our life has consumed it. He doesn't want our leftovers. He wants us to be purposeful. He wants us to be focused. He wants our attention on Him. The question we have to ask ourselves is, what are we serving God? Are we giving Him our first fruits? The very best, an intentional attention and focus on Him? Or are we giving Him whatever's left over? His third complaint, I want you to let me be me. I've discovered one of the most frustrating aspects of parenting. A child who knows more than you do. Having a conversation with Harper the other day. Harper, are you going to finish your dinner? Yeah, but I'm going to eat this apple. And she holds up the banana. I'm like, no, that's a banana. No, this is an apple. No, Harper, that's a banana. No, this is an apple. No, I'm an adult. This is a banana. You know, and it's frustrating because there's no reason that she doesn't believe me. She just decides not to. She just decides that she knows better, and it's difficult. How many of you experience this where you're just like, no, I know I'm right. Trust me. You know, please believe me. This is not an apple. This is a banana. Maybe that wasn't an actual conversation, but that's very close to conversations we have where you're just like, I know what this is. Please, please trust me. Please believe that I'm saying that this is the way it is. You know, God said in Psalm in 50 verse 21, these things you have done and I have been silent, you thought that I was one like yourself. And to me, this is one of the scarier complaints. Because sometimes, don't we do this? Where we take God and we make Him into our image instead of making our image into His? Where we put God in these little, tiny, small boxes and we say, this is who He is and this is how He acts and there's no other way He acts with the world. But he's right here. He's in the palm of my hand. This is who God is. And we make Him small. And we don't believe Him when He says certain things. This happens all throughout the Bible. Do you remember the story of Job? Job had some questions for God, and God stops him and says, Job, remind me again where you were at the foundation of the world. Oh, that's right. You weren't there. Can you hold back the rain? Can you order the stars? And can you make the storms come? No, you can't. Essentially, he's reminding Job, you are a man and I am God. Trust me. Do you remember the story of Peter? When Jesus is talking about the Son of Man needs to come and suffer, be rejected by men and die and then raise again, and Peter begins to rebuke him. What does Jesus say? What does he call Peter? He says, "Get behind me, Satan. You are thinking of the things of men, not of the things of God." God says, "Let me be me." We see this when we do things like we say, "God just wants me to be what? Happy. I don't see how this is so wrong. God just wants me to be happy." Or, "I can't believe in a loving God who would do A, B, C, or D." We begin to write things out of the Bible that don't fit the way we think they should, and we make stuff up to go along with things that we're already doing. I think one of the biggest forms of Bible study sometimes is we're doing something that we think is right, and then we try to figure out a way to say it's okay to do that. God says, "Just let me be me. Believe what I say. You thought that I was one like yourself, but you were wrong." We need to take God at His word. God's final complaint: are you listening? Psalm 81. "Hear, O my people, while I admonish you. O Israel, if you would but listen to me. But my people did not listen to my voice. Israel would not submit to me. And so I gave them over to their stubborn hearts, to follow their own counsel. Oh, that my people would listen to me, that they would walk in my ways." And I think in this verse, we really see the anguish of God. "Oh, Israel, if you would just listen. I don't want to punish you. I don't want to turn you over to your own counsel. I don't want to do these things. If you would just listen." And as a parent, I can understand that. When Harper's not doing something, when she hurts herself because she wasn't listening, it makes me sad. It hurts me. If you would just have listened, everything would have been okay. And here we see God crying out to His people, "If you would just listen." And you know, I know we hear God sometimes, but hearing isn't listening. Harper hears me. I know she hears me because when I say it's time for dinner, she comes running. But she doesn't always listen to what I say. As God's people, we come here on Sundays and we listen to His Word. When we read it at home, we are hearing His Word, but sometimes we don't always listen to what God has to say. God just wants His people to listen. When you boil down all of the complaints that we've heard this morning, it comes down to this one thing: God's people are not listening. When we ask Harper that question, "Are you listening? Did you listen to me?" Her answer is it depends one way or another whether or not what kind of consequences she's going to face. If the answer is yes and I did the following, it's praise, right? If it's no, then there's a different consequence. The same with God. How we answer the question, "Are we listening to God?" gives us consequences. And he mentions it in the verse I just read. Psalm 81:12 is the bad. "I gave them over to their stubborn hearts to follow their own counsel." Paul, in his letter to the Romans, writes in the first chapter about the wrath of God and how it's revealed against the unrighteous. And in doing so, he uses this very same phrase three times: "God gave them up." And in that chapter, he illustrates just how bad things can be, just how far people can fall when God removes His restraining hand and removes His guidance. It shows them just how bad things can get. And we all know how easy it is to fall into sin. We all know how easy it is to begin rationalizing and making excuses for ourselves. And as we do that, we just get further and further and further away from God as we get deeper and deeper into sin. And really, that's the consequence of not listening to God, is getting further and further away from His presence. But then God chooses to end His lament in a very positive way that complements the beginning. He chooses to promise them the blessings of a life lovingly listening to God and what that would lead to. In Psalm 50, he speaks of deliverance from trouble, being shown the salvation of God. And in Psalm 81, he says, "Open your mouth wide and I will fill it. I would soon subdue their enemies and turn my hand against their foes. Those who hate the Lord would cringe toward him and their fate lasts forever. But he would feed you with the finest of the wheat from the honey of the rock. I would satisfy you." God reminds his people of what happens when we listen. You will be blessed. You will be taken care of. If you would just listen to me, if you would just submit to me, I would bless your life. So the final question remains is, are we listening? I know we're hearing, but are we listening? If there's anything that we can do for you this morning, maybe you haven't been listening to God for a long time, we can help you. Maybe you need to hear and finally listen to God and give your life to Him and be saved through baptism. We can help you with that too. Whatever your need, please come and we stand and sing.